Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com.
Tennessee sounds perfect.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Let's give a hand to the one and only, the man, the myth, the legend, our super producer, Mr. Max Williams. They called me Ben.
My heart's not in it today. I'm sorry.
Well, hey, you made it to the woo, you know? Okay. So this is funny because I have no idea what this is going to sound like after Max gives it his magic touch. But I trust you. And as we said earlier, this is the second part of a two-part series on a mystery in the world of fast food. What happened to Ronald McDonald? As we said earlier, my dear friend, Mr. Noel Brown, is out at the moment, but will be returning soon. In the meantime, we were lucky enough to get one of the busiest men in the history of podcasting to come on and class up our show. Fellow Ridiculous Historians, join me in welcoming back Jonathan Strickland.
This little man called Jonathan is certainly pushed around, and how he trembles at the sound of Jonathan must be found.
Make a speech, Jonathan, make a speech, Jonathan.
And the little lips of Jonathan would make a speech as fast as they can.
It's a roll, Jonathan, it's a roll.
And the little legs of Jonathan would hit the road.
Thank you, Ben. Technically, on some days, I'm two of the busiest men.
That's got to be weird over there.
Gained a lot of weight in the pandemic, Ben.
Okay. Is it like I thought you were going for like a multiplicity thing, you know, in multiplicity.
I mean, I could be a man of two minds because I am someone who likes to eat healthy, and yet I am sitting here with a lot of McDonald's food in front of me just for a joke that was only for you because no one who's listening can actually see it.
We described it, though. I thought it was well done. Max, I thought that was a good bit. What do you think?
Yeah, we also got to go on about how we all have misophonias and no one eat around us, which is amazing. I mean, the more we just state that out loud, I think the better it is for the world.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, maybe there's an episode in the future for that. We'll have to have you back on, Jonathan, for the history of noises people hate, which is hopefully not our voices.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't want to turn this into a mukbang podcast, so.
Oh, yeah. Wow. How is that? It's such a fascinating genre. Anyway, look it up if you want to know what we're talking about. We will leave that discovery to you because we have another mystery. We have another discovery on our hands. Knowing everything that we know now after part one of what happened to Ronald McDonald,
we have to ask ourselves, where is he now? How did a world famous figure, as you know, well known, some would say, as Jesus Christ or Santa Claus, suddenly go the way of the dodo? I think, and you put this in our notes earlier, Jonathan, I think it's a really good point. Seriously, Ronald McDonald, probably not as recognizable as Mickey Mouse, right?
That's what I think. The reference you are citing is from a book, right? So there was a book by Eric Schlosser, which was called Fast Food Nation. And in that, Schlosser makes the assertion that Ronald McDonald was the second most famous fictional character behind Santa Claus. I submit that Mickey Mouse is definitely in contention. I would be shocked if Mickey Mouse was lower, especially, well, now, obviously, it would be clear that Mickey Mouse would win out because Ronald, as we are going to talk about, the star has been on the decline for quite some time. And honestly, part of the reason we're having this episode, and, you know, the reason why we built it up so much in the first episode, is you had a character who was synonymous with the franchise across the world, not just the United States. You know, we started off in the US, but by this point, it's a global phenomenon. Someone that, you know, their branding was incredibly recognizable, and yet seemingly in very short order was largely erased. And you think, how do you get to that point where you've poured this capital, this amount of resources and assets as a corporation into your marketing? And then you say, you know what? We're going to switch gears. We're going to throw this away. So why would that happen? Did something happen to the resource itself, Ronald McDonald, that poisoned the well and perhaps necessitated a move away?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very good way to put it, because we're not blowing smoke here. Ronald McDonald began to become a symbol for capitalism overall in other parts of the world. He started to represent some idea of the United States. Protesters began dressing as the clown, capital C, when they were, you know, doing different demonstrations, and a troubling discourse began. If this was a murder, then there were likely multiple conspirators, or to be more realistic, there were multiple factors. There is a fantastic Vice article written by a journalist named Amelia Tate. This is an interesting thing about this article. This journalist is looking into the story and trying to figure out what happened to the most famous clown in the world of fast food. And oddly enough, she gets kind of stonewalled in a really strange way. First, she goes to the official McDonald's website, and they say they're a little ahead of the curve in the United Kingdom. They say, we're afraid that Ronald McDonald's no longer appears in McDonald's UK advertising, yet he still travels up and down the country to visit restaurants and make sure everyone is enjoying their meals. I was a little bit arch on that
creepy
one.
Creepy.
Yeah, but
that was creepy.
But she...
We're talking clowns. We don't have to make it creepier.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a good point. So she is able to speak with the press office for McDonald's UK, and they said they refused to elaborate or to really explain in depth what happened to Ronald, but they say they do confirm he hasn't appeared in any UK advertising since 2014, including appearances in restaurants. She asked for more information, and the press officer says, I'm afraid we don't have anything further to add. And that's where she starts doing some forensics, some detective work, and comes up with one of my favorite phrases. She says, it seems that sometime in 2014, something made Ronald, Amelia's words here, persona non hamburga.
Brilliant. I mean, it's clear we have a real plastic knives out situation here.
Perfect. Yes. She did, though. She did find herself stonewalled. She asked a veteran of the advertising game for a scoop. This person used to work for McDonald's UK for some time. And this person only replied, I don't fancy being sued by a clown, which I didn't know was an ongoing concern.
I mean, it happens all the time here in the United States. But the thing I was going to mention is that in our first episode, we kind of alluded to the fact that there was an extremely strict series of rules that were laid down for actors who were playing the part of Ronald McDonald. We only touched on some of those. There were actually quite a few more, including the part where there's only one Ronald McDonald. It doesn't matter how many actors are playing Ronald McDonald throughout the various territories. There's only one Ronald McDonald, right? So you start hearing this and you're thinking, all right, this is an extension of that same kind of veil of secrecy that the company took extremely serious when Ronald McDonald was like front and foremost in the restaurant business. And now we're seeing that same level of attention and careful approach now that Ronald has mysteriously vanished. And obviously there are a lot of hypotheses you could come up with. And in fact, chances are the reason for Ronald's disappearance is due to a combination of factors that we're going to talk about. But, you know, it's frustrating when you can't get a solid answer, not even from people who have left the company for fear that the documents they had to sign, those NDAs, will still hold a legal threat over them.
Yeah. Yeah. And this, I mean, this is a serious concern. Tate runs into multiple instances of this. She speaks with a guy named AJ, who was a former Ronald and actually had a big hand in writing that official rule book we mentioned in part one. And Jay says that they're not allowed to talk about this. The author of an earlier version of the rule book, the one that said, if you're a Ronald, you can't tell children where hamburgers come from, they also declined to speak. And then she goes to the people who make those Ronald McDonald statues. And I think a lot of us in the crowd today remember those. It's Ronald frozen in tableau on a bench, usually with like an arm out so that you can sit next to the statue. And it looks like he has his arm around you and you're just, you know, hanging on a public bench with a clown.
Before we move on, though, I am not going to let this accidental pun go without being pointed out. You said AJ had a big hand in writing the rule book.
What? I don't think I get my own pun there.
Oh, you got a big hand like Ronald McDonald had big hands?
Oh, God. Did he have? I thought he was more of a like big foot guy.
Am I misremembering this? That's where he had big hands.
He had a lot of big foot energy. We got to figure this out.
Hey, it's Future Max here to correct something that past Max said. Ronald McDonald, hand size, very normal, completely normal. There is nothing large about his hands. I mean, they're bright and yellow and weird, but so, that's Ronald McDonald. He's bright and yellow and red and weird. So, yeah, I don't know what past Max was thinking, but yeah. Back to the story, Ben.
There is good news, kind of. Tate does find an answer when she talks to a guy named, well, Guy Moore, which makes me think of nominative determinism. Guy Moore, yeah, is the he's the co-founder of something called Creative Coalition. He's an ad man. Between 2004 and 2014, he worked for that advertising agency, Leo Burnett, the I'm Loving It folks. And he also won several prizes for a McDonald's ad he did called Just Passing By. And it's frankly poetic. I think maybe we can play just a little clip here.
Now the laborers and cablers and council motion tablers were just passing by. And the gothy types and scoffy types and like their coffee frothy types were just passing by. Those on their own whilst on the phone, dunking McNuggets and having a moan were just passing by. The driving through with hungry crew who just pulled off the A32 were just passing by.
Okay, so what we're seeing here and what we're hearing here is is this almost like spoken word monologue about all the different people who eat at McDonald's, a quick glimpse into their lives. Gone is the clown. And as Guy points out, when he started working with McDonald's, it wasn't maybe the best year, because 2004 was also the year a certain documentary came out. I think I think you probably remember this one too, Jonathan. Morgan Spurlock.
I have distinct memories of this era. Most of them don't involve McDonald's, because by then I had moved on to other. I had put away Childish Things, and had moved on to local regional chains. But no, I mean, I remember very much the Super Size Me documentary, and the documentary is an interesting way of putting it. I remember the Super Size Me film, and I remember that did kind of, it generated a wave of concern about the nature of the obesity issue in the United States and the connection to things like fast food restaurants. I would say that was the starting point for that conversation. I would not take Super Size Me as like the thesis statement that you should follow. There is some showmanship in Super Size Me, mm-hmm. but it definitely got the conversation moving more toward, we need to do better for ourselves and for our children. We need to make certain that we are providing healthier options for meals, because as it's going, things are taking a very unhealthy turn. And the real concern was that in the long run, we might see things like life expectancy start to go down for people in the United States because of the various health issues you can get through morbid obesity. And so that was kind of where that conversation got going. And obviously that's a very complicated conversation. Mm-hmm. It's one that it goes well beyond just fast food or exercise. It goes into all sorts of different things. You cannot simplify this down to like a bite-size bullet point, but it is the sort of thing that got a lot more attention and scrutiny directed toward the fast food industry in general and McDonald's in particular.
Yeah. Yeah, the big revelation of Super Size Me, which does have showmanship in it, I agree with that, is surprise, surprise, eating fast food all day, all the time, isn't super great for you. Not the same as a more varied diet. Guy Moore is working during this time when the pushback and concern about McDonald's really really kicks into high gear and gets into the public. He says that internally, McDonald's had a serious issue with childhood obesity and lots of rumors about what goes into the burger. This is also the time where we see the rise of speculation about like what's in McNuggets, right? What are the true ingredients of a hamburger or a Big Mac? This leads McDonald's and their roster of ad agency boffins to say, look, when people have these real concerns, regardless of how much weight they put in something like Super Size Me, we need to realize it may not be the best look to have what Moore describes as a joker at the table. So McDonald's begins to pivot, and their ad campaigns are increasingly targeting adults more so than children. This is a big change for this company. About 2010, 2011, there's another backlash that occurs. A nonprofit out of Boston starts calling for Ronald McDonald's retirement. They say he exploits children. He promotes obesity. Critics are saying that he's undermining the authority of parents, right? By saying, hey, kids, make your parents go do this, which is how a lot of advertising for children works, to your excellent point earlier, Max. And he says this guy's really, he's kind of a Pied Piper figure. You know, he's enticing kids with sugar and cool toys into bad decisions that may potentially have life-impacting consequences. So that's how, in just a few years, the world's most famous clown, this kind of secular Santa Claus of America, is being compared directly to cigarette mascots like Joe Camel. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody. Like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally. But
it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
I will say that being enticed by sugar and super cool toys could be my autobiography title. Also, I think a good strong contender for my autobiography title is a phrase you uttered earlier, Mr. Bolin, gone is the clown. Both of those would work really well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So here's another take that I have. It's interesting because it's not something that we really address in the notes. And part of it is that McDonald's had, not only was it starting to look at Ronald McDonald as a potential liability for the company, right? Like it's a bad look, as the kids say, or they used to. I don't know what kids say anymore. I don't understand them. So the other thing though, is that the generation that grew up with Ronald McDonald as this icon that enticed them into McDonald's, they are grown now. They're adults. They have kids of their own. They have already established a habit of going to McDonald's. You don't have to go after the kids to get the people into the restaurants now. The kids have grown up to be the adults, and they're going into the restaurants already. So it's almost like you're like, hey, we got them. We hooked them. Now we just have to perpetuate the cycle and watch the money roll in. So that's another kind of cynical way of looking at this, that one, Ronald McDonald was representing a potential risk, that it was standing in as a symbol for some negative things, and that's never what you want for your marketing campaign. And two, really, it had done its job already.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And that's one I hadn't considered, you know, because Max is our marketing expert here. So I would defer to your expertise here. But Max, that I would say that doesn't even sound cynical. That sounds very on the money.
Oh yeah, that's like marketing 101 right there. That's perfect. I mean, it's like, you know, marketing's all measured in impressions. You've already made the impressions with, to Jonathan's point, with the adults, with the people who are your audience you want, who have disposable income, who are going to spur on the next generation. So instead of just, and let's be honest, I mean, like, I'm a child of the 90s. I clowns, by the time I came around, were really kind of an outdated image. I mean, I don't even think it was like, even like the like creepiness had fully set in yet of clowns, but it was also just like not, it just wasn't something that was pertinent in my like thinking, or if I want to complicate my zeitgeist.
There we are.
It was like, and so it's just like, you know, moving on from this thing, as Jonathan said, who's just like, it's not making you any money and soon it's going to start costing you money. So, so it just makes a lot of sense, you know, for them to, you know, just think instead of like trying to get impressions with this thing that's clearly not going to make us much money, let's, you know, instead be like, this is the McDonald's that you got your Happy Meal at when you were a kid. Now you can get your whatever they advertise to adults, I don't know, while your kid gets their happy meal.
McFlurry.
You can spin it that way.
McFlurry.
Yeah, you spin the nostalgia for you. Maybe not nostalgia, but like, you know, like remembrance and enjoyment for you, and then building that memory of going McDonald's as a kid with your kids and stuff.
There we go. Intergenerational. Yeah. That's, I think you guys nailed it. Ronald was not ready to give up the ghost just yet. He wasn't after that big Mac in the sky. In 2014, he had one last hurrah, you know, rage against the dying of the fries, etc. So he ditches the jumpsuit and he cleans up a little. He's got a blazer now, a red blazer. He's got a sharp bow tie, and he begins tweeting directly from McDonald's official Twitter account. As for people who are very experienced with Twitter, like you, Jonathan, we've seen this happen before with mixed results, where an official Twitter account goes into a little bit of internet trolling, or they try a campaign. Sometimes they work really well, like the Wendy's mixtape. Sometimes they fall flat. Unfortunately, the latter is what happened with our poor boy, Ronnie. People were literally hashtag not loving it. And we're not kidding, that was a trending hashtag.
Yeah, to all the brands out there, before you decide to have a snarky, fun Twitter marketing push, really think it over. Because one, if it's not really kind of zany and fun, the audience picks up on it immediately. If it's not sincere, then they know. And you might get a lot of traction, but it's not going to be positive. And two, just like think over that snarky joke a lot. EA recently got into trouble because they posted a tweet that read, "She's a 10, except you find out she only plays single player games." That did not go over well. So yeah, this the Ronald McDonald experience is an example of this kind of trend of brands trying to embrace new communication. Twitter's not new, but newish communication channels, and finding that their approach to messaging is just a complete misfire for that particular audience.
Right. So at this moment, if we could wax poetic, kind of in the spirit of Guy Moore and his Just Passing By ad and performance, we can picture Ronald McDonald like this scene in partway through so many rom-coms. He's standing in the rain outside of America's dining room window, and he's humming to himself. The song he's humming, the oldie hit, "Everyone loves a clown. Everybody loves a clown, so why don't you?"
Well, does he have cue cards?
Yeah, he's got cue cards. You know, maybe he's got a boombox, but the makeover doesn't work out. Spoilers. So for
now, he has Grimace holding a boombox. He has okay. Grimace holding the boombox.
Okay, yeah.
I'm having too many. You're mixing too many movie metaphors. Just say anything, guys. Just say anything.
Well done. Points. Also, we're just going to keep piling on. Hamburglar is like a Cyrano character, and he's in the bushes.
He's going to keep adding the beef to this.
Yes, yes, beef it. And so he's trying to tell Ronald McDonald what to say, but because he's the Hamburglar, he's speaking in gibberish. So he's just like rubble, 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 rubble. and scene.
Then Sunday's there, and Sunday just looks at the camera, and goes, "Are you happy, Jonathan?"
I have to say that this is making me feel like we are all in improv level 3 class.
Guys, be specific. What kind of bush is the Hamburglar hiding behind? And we're going through so much cool, weird stuff in this series today, folks. You may be hearing some thunder in the background, and I think it's appropriate to the way our story has turned in part 2. So we're going to keep it in. There's something else. McDonald's tries another mascot. It is an anthropomorphic Happy Meal named, in a burst of creativity, Happy. Happy is not successful. I hesitate to put a picture in the chat, but you can find it and you'll kind of see why. But that was not the final. That was not the final fry in the coffin, because something else happened in 2016.
Yeah, this was completely out of McDonald's control. This was one of those cultural moments where a trend starts and begins to build and has rippling repercussions for unrelated entities. So McDonald's, in a way, is a victim, as were we all. So what Mr. Bolin is referring to is that very special time in 2016 where, for reasons that never really became apparent, people were dressing up as scary clowns and scaring people in a scary way.
Right. And that's true. It's a look, collectively, everybody listening to this show now, we've all been through a lot in the past few years. 2016 seems a shockingly long time ago, but it is true. For unspecified reasons, people across the United States, in the Midwest, the South, all along the East Coast, began seeing, you know, clowns just out in the wild, sometimes standing creepily like the old school Ronald McDonald when he thought the camera was done rolling, sometimes trying to engage with people. People thought it might be a weird guerrilla marketing campaign for a movie, you know, Blair Witch style or something. But there was no way of knowing who would be motivated to dress as a clown. There was no way of knowing whether there was a concerted effort or whether it was just organically a trend that other people were independently picking up on. And there's not a way to address the issue. In this country, you can't really make the act of buying a costume illegal. And things start to escalate across that summer. It's August, I think, when law enforcement in South Carolina gets reports that suspicious individuals dressed like clowns are literally trying to lure children into the woods. And then there are more stories about this. It continues. We even did a Stuff They Don't Want You to Know episode on it. Eventually, McDonald's, who I agree with you, Jonathan, they are a victim here. This is beyond their control. Eventually, they have to make a statement, which is something, you know, you probably never think about when you join a PR firm or you work for McDonald's. You never think one day I'm going to have to talk on record about all these clowns and make sure that our clown is separated from that conversation.
It rarely comes up in the interview process.
Right, right. Welcome to Improv Level 3 or McDonald's Corporate. Here's the question. So, yeah, I don't think people plan that way, but the company did come out with a statement. I think it was the right thing to do. They said they're being thoughtful in respect to Ronald McDonald's participation in community events as a result of the, quote, current climate around clown sightings in communities, meaning In plain English, the sun was setting on McDonald Land. And then, like you brilliantly foreshadowed in part one of this episode, a year later, 2017, Stephen King's newest adaptation of It hits the big screen. The main villain of It is, and this is not spoiling it, is an evil clown named Pennywise, originally played in a made-for-TV adaptation by Tim Curry, and then in this big-screen adaptation, also two parts, it's played by one of the Skarsgård kids, right?
Yes, one of them.
What? It's one of them. Yeah. It's the same one from Hemlock Grove. Yeah.
Yes, yes. He and we talked about this. We're not going to get into like favorites or anything because everyone has their own favorite.
Sure.
But I will say I have a soft spot in my heart for Tim Curry, largely because I was a kid when that, teenager, when that miniseries came out. And I had already read the book by the time the miniseries had come out. And so I feel like while there's a lot of stuff that's in that book that I don't think is appropriate for children, right. A lot of the, because it follows kids, it speaks to a kid's sense of adventure. Like it's a horror novel, but it is also an adventure book. And so like I have a soft spot for the Tim Curry version. That being said, I definitely would not want my corporate mascot to be associated or compared in any way to this monstrous clown that gets even more monstrous in the more recent adaptations.
Yeah, 100%. It's like, think about like the Aflac duck or what the Geico, it's a gecko, right?
Well, if you're going with Geico, you've got about 8 different mascot choices you could go with. There could be cavemen. It could be a pile of cash.
Yeah, that's true. But in any one of those cases, you could be caught flat out if the wrong thing happens in the real world. So it looks like because they made the decision to pull Ronald back even further due to literally sightings of crazed clowns, it looks like they dodged a bullet because they got out just a year before It once again ruined clowns for a generation. So wither our hapless Ronald. What's up with old Ronnie these days? He's not tweeting anymore. Checked, just to confirm. You're not going to see him in a commercial anytime soon. McDonald Land has probably been paved over. We're going to skip that terrible joke I made. Look, let's be honest. A lot of people in the United States have some degree of what's called coulrophobia, fear of clowns. And I would argue, for many of us listening today, it's because we grew up in a post-John Wayne Gacy America, right?
Sure.
And there's a clear, am I assigning too much power to that?
I don't think so. I think that was, you know, this real world monster who took an image that previously had been associated with childhood fun and innocence and then used it to such a horrific extent, it ended up fueling tons of horror fiction for the following decades, right? They become tropes that were based off this real world incident that to this day, like the evil clown is something that just is like a standard stock monster. And I would argue that Gacy was kind of the launching point for that to really become a thing. To some extent, we've seen that sort of association with childish things in the past, whether it's like a ventriloquist dummy or a doll or something like that. There always is something slightly creepy with any element where a child's imagination creates some of the anima for that thing. And I think clowns fall into that category too, even though they're portrayed obviously by hopefully animated people. But yeah, I think that Gacy, that was like a real turning point and kind of became an inspiration, if you will. It's terrible to use that word for someone like that, but an inspiration for a lot of horror novelists and filmmakers moving forward.
Yeah, I agree with the way you put it. And I will say, whenever we talk about this kind of stuff, it is important to note hashtag not all clowns. Easily confused with the hashtag no tall clowns, But there are plenty there. I'm not above it, but there are plenty of people who are, you know, working as clowns. There are prestigious clown academies, right? In different parts of the world, there is an ancient tradition and there is an art to it. There is a craft. So we're not saying that all clowns are bad. We're just saying it's inescapable. It's inescapable, at least in the minds of many U.S. residents, to not see a clown and think there is some sort of implied sinister aspect. We can blame it on Pennywise. We can blame it on Gacy. We can blame it on, you know, honestly, anything other than the cinematic masterpiece Killer Clowns from Outer Space. You guys remember
right.
that,
I'm they sure. Had an amazing theme song by the Dickies. So, yeah, that's like gold cinema. I'm sure it's in the Criterion Collection.
Yes, it should be. Max, have you seen Killer Clowns from Outer Space?
I'm pretty certain I have. It's been a long time if I have, though.
Oh,
I know of it.
That theme song, to hear the entrance of the gladiators, which is the famous tune that we always associate with clowns, but being played speed metal style on a guitar. Man, one of my favorite movie soundtracks of all time. Yeah, true classic of goofy schlock horror.
One, how dare you? Two, no, I'm just kidding. it definitely is some schlock. It puts the shock in schlock. And you're going to have the most fun watching that film if you do not worry about the motivations and don't bother addressing plot holes or indeed plot. So, yeah, we can't deny that what happened here is that Ronald McDonald was, in this case, found guilty by association. His whimsy was also kind of outdated. More and more people saw him less like a fun goofball and more like that Pied Piper character, you know, who is getting kids, getting into minds of children and leading them toward quite possibly serious health problems. McDonald's leadership is aware of all these factors. That's why today, if you go into the modern McDonald's, if you stroll into one of, well, most of the 36,889 or so locations across 119 countries, sorry, Russia, you will have to look pretty closely to find a trace of what I think we could call a fast food Ozymandias. I would love to travel around McDonald's of the world and just take that line from Ozymandias, look upon my works, ye mighty in despair, and just like put it in a little placard by the statue. I don't know.
I have to admit, Ben, a peek behind the curtain really quickly. We do have these notes that we share with one another, and we all contributed to it. Ben did the vast majority of the contribution. And when I read this comparison to Ozymandias, I was so delighted to know you.
Oh, man. Likewise. I use that reference way too often, by the way. It's going to be a problem. So thank you for enabling my myopia. thematic as it is. And there's the thing, though. I think we can all agree nostalgia is a heck of a drug. Max, Jonathan, that's something we've been talking about in part one. It's something we're talking about in part two. And it still remains the case today. People pretty much everywhere we will remember Ronald McDonald. Or not everywhere, but in many parts of the world, you can stroll into a place and you can say, hey, do you remember Ronald McDonald? And even if they don't know the name, you can show them the picture and they'll go, oh, yeah, McDonald's. They might even just call him McDonald's in some places. People still like have a hot market for Happy Meal toys. I used to love those. I didn't know that some of them would be worth money later.
Right. You can. Sure.
Right. It's nuts. What were some of your favorite Happy Meal toys, guys?
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody. Like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally. But
it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
You know, it's interesting because, like, I remember back when the toys were completely independent of any other type of branding. And then there was a shift where you started to see partnerships between McDonald's and other popular brands that were out there, and you would get tie-ins, especially Disney. There was like a string of Disney tie-ins with Happy Meals for a while. But I almost said it. Oh my gosh. I almost said, in my day, the toys weren't like that. And, you know, I just remember getting these little toys that I thought were fun and diverting for maybe like a day or two, and then they find their way at the bottom of a toy box and never emerge again. And then, you know, flash forward 30 years, and you're like, I could have paid my college debt with that one toy if I had just not played with it and kept it in good condition.
Yeah. I mean, I was kind of thinking about it. It's like, Ben, you posed the question. I'm like, I can't think of a single toy. And then Jonathan, you said that part about it being tied in. And I'm like, so it's, yeah, I mean, like a lot of the toys I remember like whatever movie or TV show or whatever I liked, if they had a McDonald's toy, oh, we had to go get it. I remember being definitely way too old for Happy Meals and getting Happy Meals still because you need to get the toy. I think eventually they worked out some sort of system where you could buy the toy if you wanted to, but you didn't have to get Happy Meals. But there would be like stories of people buying a Happy Meals, like full-grown adults buying Happy Meals so they get the toy and stuff.
Mm-hmm. I particularly remember I don't know if they were tied to anything, but there was a series of these little figures that were that would transform from you know, like a cup of soda or a basket of fries into robots, the robot characters.
Yeah.
And I thought they were so cool. And, you know, God, I'd be living a life of leisure now if I had just held on to them, you know?
Right.
But,
yeah, I can't remember if those were tied in with Transformers or maybe GoBots, thing that a lot of people don't remember, but just to remind you, GoBots came first.
Yes.
Transformers came after GoBots. There's just that the Transformers were, let me check my notes here, 1 billion times better.
I also just want to see if we can get a sense of scale here. I don't want to give us too many regrets, but you can find any number of lists. This is just a cursory DuckDuckGo search. You can find any number of lists of highly prized McDonald's Happy Meal toys. Number one, apparently, is Ty's Teeny Beanie Boos. So like Beanie Babies. You could sell them for $450. So not quite a mortgage yet, but we still should have saved them.
I got one right here. I have one from Kids Meal Fandom page, and it has like a list of all the ones. And the first Happy Meal toys they have listed is from 1979 for Star Trek the Motion Picture.
Oh,
that's
random and weird.
It was great because those toys were just as boring as the movie was.
So bad.
Really? You guys agree on that?
Star Trek, the motionless picture. I was watching it in 4K remaster one day. It was so bad.
I mean, there's
it's so bad.
There's a segment that has to be at least 5 or 6 minutes long where they're just doing a slow orbit of the Enterprise as the movie theme is playing. And that movie theme is the one that they would repurpose for Star Trek, the Next Generation many years later.
Right.
And I mean, it's a pretty ship, and you understand that at the time that this was a real achievement in special effects, but it destroys any sense of pacing that you have when you're taking like literally 5 to 6 minutes out of your movie just to do hero shots of your spaceship.
It's so bad. And it's even worse when you see afterwards the difference in budgets between that and the Wrath of Khan. Like the motionless picture's budget was so much bigger than Wrath of Khan. It's like twice as big as the Wrath of Khan's budget.
Wow. You guys are schooling me here. Also, as you can tell, Jonathan, Max is, in addition to being our resident curling expert, our resident expert on Star Trek. So we might have to have you back when we finally do our Star Trek episode. Right now, what we can say is that people still you'll find very ardent fans of Ronald McDonald. He didn't entirely leave social media. He has an official Instagram. And maybe most importantly, Ronald McDonald House Charities, that organization is still around. They're still doing good work. And who knows, really, it's a pop culture is a study of cyclical things, right? So a lot of things that shine one day will find their way into a spotlight again. And with the sheer enormity of the Shadow Ronald McDonald cast, we can't ever quite say he's gone for sure. So what we have witnessed could perhaps be described as the first age of the clown. So we have so much crazy stuff that we found a lot of really interesting tangents and trivia. We sprinkled some throughout the show. I wanted to ask Jonathan, are there some that we didn't get to that really stood out to you?
The only one I would really mention is the fact that you talked about how you had these Ronald McDonald statues. Some places had statues where it was like a 7-foot-tall clown standing there. In others, it was the bench one where there's a sitting clown with its arm extended where you could sit down and maybe have your picture taken with Ronald giving the old yawn and reach move on you on the bench next to you. But what was really interesting is obviously those became targets for vandalism throughout the years. Like teenagers and college students would often target these, and it became kind of almost like a contest to see if you could steal one from your local McDonald's. And I've got a few examples. In 1981, Ronald McDonald was found sleeping with the fishes. So this full-size statue of Ronald was pulled out of the Theta Pond at Oklahoma State University. 1986, it happened again, but this time it wasn't Oklahoma. It was in Florida at Lake Sumter Community College. And then you started, you'll see other reports of this too. Sometimes, a lot of times, they didn't find the statue, but there were some interesting ones. There was one where a statue was stolen in 91 and turned up in the middle of the desert outside of Phoenix, Arizona. And my favorite was there was a military officer, well, military, a member of the military, I shall say, won't say officer, who stole a Ronald McDonald statue with the goal of setting it onto a raft off the Santa Monica Pier. Now, he stole it in Biloxi, Mississippi, which is not close to Santa Monica, right?
Wow.
Drove it across the country to California, but was unable to complete his plan. He was caught with the statue. The statue was returned to its location in Mississippi via an Air Force flight. So Ronald McDonald had a military escort bring him back to Mississippi from California.
Think about how much you regret your actions during that drive, because you steal that statue and you're like, yeah, this is great. And then you have that entire drive to think about, like, is this bit really that funny? And then you're like, you know, if I send him off the coast, like, who else going to know about this? Is this going to go out in the ocean? And then by the time you're in, like, middle of nowhere Texas on that drive, you're like, why am I this way? Why do I do things like this?
Why am I risking a court martial over a Ronald McDonald statue? Also, another good question to ask is, why do we taxpayers foot the bill for the Air Force to take a statue of Ronald McDonald back to Mississippi?
That's my only thing I vote for, is to make sure that happens. I'm a single issue voter, and that's all that I look at when I consider a candidate. And I'll ask him too. I'll write to the campaign and say, where are we at with McDonald statues? This is all a true story. And that member of the military's name was Colin Powell. You can read about it in his autobiography. That might not be true. Don't fact check that part of the show, folks. But we are going to call it the day. We're going to call it the week. We have found the official explanation for the demise of Ronald McDonald. Now, given, again, his enormous influence of pop culture, it's fair to say he's kind of maybe Cthulhu-esque, right? Dead but dreaming, and may rise again. But for now, we hope you enjoyed the ride. Thanks to our super producer, Mr. Max Williams. Thanks again to Christopher Hasiotis, Eves Jeffcoat, our research associates, Zach Williams, no relation, Jeff Bartlett, and of course, one of my absolute favorite people, Mr. Noel Brown, who will be returning soon. And with that, Jonathan, I'm sure you can hear our outro music. I want to thank you specifically, man. This has been an absolute blast. I can't wait for you to come back again on the show.
Thanks so much, Ben. And if you guys are interested in hearing if you guys are interested, wait, no, I got this. I got this. If you guys are interested in hearing
gentlemen.
These are suck to edit. Damn it.
You did the Quister, a.k.a. Jonathan Strickland. I can't believe you're back.
I'm back. You see that I have ripped off my tearaway clothing to reveal my doublet and jester's hat underneath.
You got us, man. I thought we were gonna, I was actually surprised. I thought we were just talking to your alter ego, Jonathan Strickland, but it seems your true colors are shining through. You have flummoxed us. You've yet to flummox us, hopefully, but yeah, you got us. I thought we were gonna get away clean.
Not this time, Mr. Bolin. No, for those of you who are unaware, blissfully, as to what the heck is going on right now, welcome to the most cringeworthy segment in all of podcasting, where I, the Quizster, quiz your beloved host and his plucky producer on some scenarios. I present three scenarios. Two are true. One is false. And the contestants have to decide which one's the false one. It's devilishly clever.
So it's just a game show. I mean, that's your devilishly clever thing. It's just doing the most standard basic game show ever. Is that what I'm hearing?
McDonald's is just a fast food restaurant, Max. Touche?
Sure, I give that to you. But yeah, I don't think we were ever up to debate that was just a fast food restaurant. But you know what, buddy? I'll let you have this one. Go ahead.
Right, here we go. I shall present three scenarios. You shall have 3 minutes between the two of you to debate which of the scenarios is the false one. And, as always, I will allow you to ask me questions, but only if you first preface your question with a particular phrase of my choosing. And this time, the phrase shall be, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba, I'm loving it. Scenario...
I'm loving it, okay.
That's it, yes. Scenario number one. The regional fast food chain Rack's Roast Beef at one point boasted more than 500 locations across the United States. These days, that number has dwindled down to less than half a dozen. Reasons for the restaurant's decline are many, but perhaps one of the most pertinent to our discussion today was the introduction of a certain Mr. Delicious. This was an animated character in commercials, a sad sack divorcee who was supposed to lure adult diners into the fast food establishment. Shortly after his introduction, the company filed for bankruptcy. Scenario 2. The first location of Doggy Diner opened in Oakland, California in 1948. The mascot for this hot dog and hamburger fast food joint was a dachshund wearing a bow tie and a chef's hat, which you can see outside some of their establishments, a three-dimensional one. And not only that, the dog's head would rotate exorcist style, letting you know the victuals inside were devilishly good. But the spread of larger franchises ultimately spelled doom for the poor doggy, and by 1986, the company was out of business. Scenario 3. In the late 1960s, a regional restaurant chain in the upper Midwest called Dock o' the Bay promised to bring quote-unquote fresh seafood to the landlocked states. The chain's mascot was a fish doctor. By that, I mean it was a fish wearing a stethoscope and a head mirror, not a human who tended to sick fish. It was, of course, named Doc. Perhaps it was a bad idea to associate a seafood restaurant with a doctor like that. The experiment only lasted until 1977, when Long John Silver's lay broadsides against the little chain and sunk it. By that, I mean Doc of the Bay went out of business. Begin.
Okay, I'm running to our timer. We spent a lot of the show budget on this one, so we are going to have 3 minutes. Let me get the clock rolling. Okay, I'm running, and go.
Ben, what you feeling? First impression, which one are you saying? Which ones you say is real? Which ones you saying are false?
I gotta say, maybe because it's most recent in my memory, the fish doctor one seems sus. What do you think?
I don't know. Being a born in the Midwest, it seems very Midwestern to do something like that. I think number one's totally real. That's what I'm coming off as. As soon as I heard it, I'm like, that sounds like someone I've heard of.
Okay. We need a recap of number two. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. I'm loving it.
Wow, we did two full podcasts and you still don't have their catchphrase. Right. So number two was the doggy diner hot dog and hamburger fast food joint. Their mascot was a dachshund wearing a chef's hat and a bow tie. They had essentially a bust of this character outside some of their restaurants that would rotate 360 degrees, spreading its endless gaze across all the lands, judging throughout all of time, at least until 1986 when the restaurant went under.
Yeah, I totally think that's real.
You think so?
I don't know. I think they're all real. They all sound like something terrible that people would do.
Okay, how about this, Max? Let's you and I let's leave it to chance. I'm gonna say that I think I feel like I'm having a tough time deciding between number two and number three.
Hold on, let me ask. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba, I'm loving it.
Oh, well done, Max. What's your question?
So we've already both trashed on Star Trek The Motionless Picture. What is your favorite Star Trek movie?
Oh, that would be Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. I think that one is the most... It's not like Star Trek the series, which was much more thoughtful and more about working things out and exploration. But as an action film, Star Trek II is phenomenal. Now, if I wanted to go beyond that, maybe, I don't know, Star Trek IV of The Voyage Home is fun, but, I mean, it's very cheesy. And Star Trek VI has Shakespeare in it, so that's also wonderful.
Okay. Oh, okay. No, we've got just a few seconds now. All right. Don't let him distract you, Max. He's taking the time. That's what he's doing.
All right. So, Ben, which one are you going with?
It's three or two for me, man.
Which one are you feeling stronger on? I can go either way myself.
Three, Fish Doctor is weird.
Let's go Fish Doctor.
We're locking it in. 3, 2, 1.
Well, so you really thought there was a doggy diner? There was. You were right. It was number three. That was the one I made up. Congratulations.
Oh.
You have picked the correct one. My favorite of those is, in fact, the Rax roast beef, because there are videos about that establishment online that you need to watch to really understand exactly how strange that marketing campaign was. It was like taking the spirit of Sunday the Dog and putting it into a divorced cartoon character.
Well, you know, that really was up to chance for Max and myself. And I think one thing, at least that I learned with that, is that fast food campaigns can be so surreal and strange anyhow that all three of those seemed believable to me.
So believable.
I guess I just, right, like, thank goodness for Fish Doctor. But very well done, Jonathan. We just scraped by with that one. Thank you for most of your work on these two series, or on these two episodes. So we can't wait to have you back on the air, Ridiculous Historians. We can't wait for you to tune in when Max, Noel, and I are diving into more strange stories, possibly with more returning guests. In the meantime, Quister, where can people find you under your Daylight cover identity, Jonathan Strickland?
Well, they can find him as the host of the Tech Stuff podcast. They can find me and that flash of lightning just before the light completely goes dark. Look out your window. I'm there.
Wow, that's amazing. It feels anticlimactic to say that Max and I are on Twitter.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at @ATL_MaxWilliams. So, yeah, I will be there. And, I'm like a little too terrified to say anything else right now. So, Ben, why don't you go away with stuff?
Sure. We've got, you can find me at Ben Bullen HSW on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram where I am at Ben Bullen, BOWLIN. Be sure to tune in next week. Thanks to all our research associates. A big special thanks to our ride or die, Mr. Noel Brown. In his words, we'll see you next time, folks.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code iHeart for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.